Why you are busy enjoying your lunch, why you are busy having some times from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the Radio News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening, we ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good afternoon, Namibia, and welcome to On The Reading News Analysis right here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. I am your host, Ndafa Happy Juju. Now, of course, at a time when confidence in institutions, economic stability, and public accountability are under closer scrutiny, the need for disciplined thinking and reliable information has never been greater. Now, in moments like this, clarity is not a luxury, but rather a necessity. Now, across the country, from the decision-making offices of Windhoek, the capital city of Namibia, to the coast of fishing economy, the crop fields and the cattle posts of the north, and the growing towns of the south, Namibians are engaging in serious reflection. Are our national budgets aligned with our development ambitions? Is policy translating into measurable impact? Are institutions adapting to meet rising public expectations? Now, right here, we examine how priorities move from parliamentary debate to practical implementation. We consider how allocations on paper become infrastructure in communities. And we ask whether economic data reflects the lived experiences of households and businesses. On The Reader is not driven by rhetoric. It is guided by evidence, by context, and as constructive a dialogue. Right here, policymakers, analysts, industry voices, and engaged citizens share one responsibility, that is to elevate the national conversation through facts and reasonable or reasoned debate. As Namibia confronts complex economic decisions and evolving public demands, our commitment remains steady. Thoughtful dialogue strengthens accountability, and accountability strengthens progress. Now let's get started right here on The Reader. Namibia is moving closer to strengthening its legal framework against cybercrime as a draft Cyber Bill enters its final stages of development. Now, the Minister of Information and Communication Technology recently held stakeholder consultations on the proposed legislation, inviting input from legal experts, civil society organizations, the private sector, and members of the public. The engagement forms part of an ongoing public participation process before the bill is finalized and tabled in Parliament. Information Minister Emma Theophilus noted that the bill is currently with government legal drafters, and she said once passed, the law is expected to safeguard Namibia's cyberspace and strengthen existing legal frameworks. Now, the consultations focused on the scope and structure of the proposed law, which aims to address growing technology-related crimes in the country, and officials outlined provisions targeting offenses such as cyberbullying, online harassment, identity theft, hacking, unlawful interception of communications, and the distribution of intimate images without consent, also known as Let's not get into that one yet. Now, a key point of discussion was the alignment of the draft legislation with international standards, including the United Nations Convention Against Cybercrime, which Namibia signed in 2024. Government representatives said that the bill seeks to harmonize domestic law with global frameworks while adapting to local realities. Now, let's get into a conversation with somebody who obviously understands this in depth. And yes, they will be talking to Mr. Edward Nepolo, who is the head of Department Computer Science at the Namibia University of Science and Technology. Let's pause here for a moment as we get hold of him.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Now, like I said, joining us in studio telephonically is Mr. Edward Napolo. A very good afternoon to you, Mr. Napolo, and welcome to On The Reader News Analysis. Always a pleasure to have you and engage on technology-related aspects.
Yes, thank you very much. Good afternoon, and thank you for inviting me.
Sure. Pleasure is all mine. Now, Mr. Napolo, we're talking about the cybercrime bill. Just what is the cybercrime bill, and why is it necessary at this point in time?
Okay, the cyber crime bill, if I have to sort of explain it in layman, it basically just provides the foundation to provide the country with legal tools to make our cyberspace safer. So if I have to directly pick from the objective of the bill itself, it has three main purposes. The first one is to provide a legal framework that protects the confidentiality, integrity, and availability of our computer systems, which may include data also. And confidentiality and availability and integrity, these are basically just what we call the principles of the CIS right, but which literally means that when we talk about cybersecurity, we are really just talking about the confidentiality of the data that we are dealing with, the integrity of the data that we are dealing with to ensure that the data is not
compromised,
you know, changed. Yes, it's not changed by unauthorized people, but it doesn't only end with data. It also speaks to system integrity to ensure that whatever systems that you are using, that you are probing, they give you the correct output as it should be. And of course, the availability of data, which means that the data should be accessible to those that need it.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's the first one. And then the second one is to basically facilitate the process of investigation and prosecution for those who commit cybercrime. And then the last one is just to ensure that the protection of our cyber infrastructure or critical infrastructure in the country, and to ensure that we do not have our critical infrastructure exposed to such cybercrime.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, you being in the academic area, now from an academic perspective, how would you assess the overall structure of the cybercrime bill? Of course, I understand that consultation, I believe, are still ongoing, or the final draft still has to be released. But how do you actually assess it?
I haven't attended all the consultation meetings. I've attended the last one. But, I mean, like you said, the consultations are still ongoing and the amendments are still being done. However, so far, I think the government has made a commendable job in making time to do these consultations around the country. And so far, what I've seen, it's something that we can, you know, that we can work with, though it may still need adjustments here and there. But what I've seen, it's a commendable job that the team has done.
Mm-hmm. It is long overdue. I think a lot of people obviously have been speaking and asking when do people actually get to be prosecuted, those who are committing cyber crime against also other individuals and against institutions. Now, do you see this cyber bill will adequately address the current cyber threats facing Namibia? And perhaps do we have the capacity, would you say? Perhaps we have, of course, we know that much is going to be done towards this bill, but speaking now at this particular point in your understanding, of course, getting also just your opinion, do you think we have the capacity to actually enforce this bill and to ensure that those who commit cybercrime are brought to book and held accountable?
Yeah, absolutely. The thing, the question of capacity, it's not something that we need to be concerned about, because if we are matured enough to use the digital space in the way we are using it now, I think that it would inherently mean that we should be matured and capable of defending this the cyberspace that we are making use of. And we need to also understand that when it comes to the protection of the cyberspace, there are multiple ways to do it. And in my domain, we generally partition them into administrative efforts or administrative measures and technical measures. From the end of the technical measures, where we put tools in place like firewalls, anti-malware, and all these technological tools to protect our cyberspaces, in that end, or from that front, we are already doing quite a good job. However, the technology alone cannot protect cyberspace. We also need to regulate the human behavior, and that's how the side of things comes into place, where we have to put laws in place. And then from the laws, you sort of extract policies to make sure that you have people that are making use of the cyberspace, ensuring that they are behaving and handling the data in a good, in a responsible manner. But to answer the question, we are very much capable. And I say that because the bill that is being drafted right now, it sort of clearly defines what constitutes of a cyber offense, right? And the idea really behind it, and this is my personal opinion, the idea is to make sure that we deter that kind of behavior, right? The prosecution and the investigation and the punishment, that really only comes when the deterrence has failed. Mm-hmm. But with this cybercrime bill, the number one priority is to discourage the practice of cybercrime.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is about time, because I want to really say that a lot of people, and I think a lot of young people, are really abusing their powers or their rights impersonating people, speaking very harsh and rudely. Positive criticism is allowed, but then also negatively criticizing others online, which is really not good. And we talk about also revenge pornography, which we have noticed has happened right here in our country, Namibia. From your opinion, Mr. Nepolo, what do you see? How do you then perhaps think that this would help really curb cybercrime, right? Of course, it will send a shockwave to many, and of course, others will now be made as an example for others not to follow. But from your perspective, being an academic yourself and understanding this in depth is something that I believe you deal with on a regular basis. Just what do you think, how really important is this bill? I would want somebody in the village to understand what cybercrime bill really entails, and how really significant, not just for somebody in the village, but for me, myself as well, who perhaps put up my picture on Facebook, and also for the minister, also for the president, just how really significant is this cybercrime bill?
It's quite significant and a big step into the right direction, because what the cybercrime bill does is, first, it clearly defines what constitutes of cyber offenses, right?
Mm-hmm.
And after that, it empowers the law enforcement agencies with the means to investigate and prosecute offenders. And I think that was the one thing that was a little bit missing from the time when we didn't have this bill in place. I mean, we had to rely on other acts, maybe the right to privacy and all these kinds of things to people, but there are always perhaps gray areas. I mean, I'm not into law, but I'm pretty sure there are some gray areas in which you couldn't really prosecute a person for committing a cyber offense. However, this cyber crime bill, it addresses those things. It defines what constitutes of cyber offenses. It empowers law enforcement agencies, meaning that the law enforcement agencies have now the necessary means to do proper investigations, and also to do prosecution, and also then apply penalties to offenders. And by having this framework in place, it means that through the Cybercrime Act or bill right now, but later when it's enacted, of course, people will be much better behaved when it comes to their social activities online.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. And it is intended to align with international best practices. And I think I would give a thumbs up there, because I think anything that Namibia usually wants to do, they want to really align with international best practices and not just regionally or locally. Now, of course, do you perhaps have any example of a particular country that you perhaps have known of that has really implemented the cybercrime and is doing really well that you perhaps would say Namibia could copy from?
Country specifically, no, but I know that the European Union, they have what is called the GDPR, which is General Data Protection Regulation, I think it's called, where they really emphasize that if you are going to handle data that belongs to Europeans or European citizens, these are the standards that you need to adhere to. And should you not adhere to these standards, there's going to be penalties that follow. And these are very heavy penalties. So it kind of builds a mindset into the data handler that, okay, if we have to deal with these kinds of data, we need to ensure that we afford it the necessary, protection to make sure that it doesn't leak, to make sure that we don't mishandle it, to make sure that we handle this data to the utmost professional level that we can. So that is the one example that I could give that I would always give, and it's something that I think we can learn a lot from as a country.
Indeed. Mr. Edward Napolo, perhaps your last points that you perhaps feel like I didn't touch on that you would also want to share on before we close up?
My last point is just perhaps to encourage the participation of those that are interested in contributing to the cybercrime bill, because there are consultations going on at the moment, and it's important that all the views of everyone who feels that they could contribute to the bill, that they are taken into consideration. I'm not exactly sure when the next consultations are, but I would like to urge everyone to participate in the consultation process.
Okay. Mr. Edward Napolo, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reading News Analysis. We sure hope to engage again in future.
Thank you very much. Thank you for inviting me.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. And then we had it up from Mr. Edward Napolo, and he is the head of Department Computer Science at the Namibia University of Science and Technology, also known as NUST. Now, of course, let's pause a little bit here and come back still to discuss on this interesting conversation. Now, remember, our studio line is open. We'll open it very soon for you to actually engage. But now, let's get right into understanding what this bill actually entails.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the Eye.
Let's now take a listen to Ms. Linda Aipinge, who is the executive director in the Ministry of Information Communication Technology, speaking during the consultation of this cybercrime bill.
Because we have a national cybersecurity strategy and our ministry's plan, which was adopted by cabinet when we are in the interview, we stand in the rather of the same event, and we did launch out cybersecurity awareness in our country, in the panel we've been following for the past week, ministry with the partners, Minister, and Southeast Asia, we're very busy. This is some other takers. And then we say the banks and other. There are times when we give away our information ourselves. Somebody says, give me your OTP, give me your one, look on to it's you and I. Look at it. So if we are not educated ourselves, we can have a very good work. That would be pointless. So that's why we are putting in place measures to ensure that we are educating the people. We, our children, bring home. We deal with the police a lot. We hear cases that are happening. Now, yes, we give unlimited connectivity to our children. Because we do this, you come home, a pair of my heels. And then I sit, take it home, go in the room, be distracting me. What are you doing? Who are you talking to? So, with UNICEF again, the son of the man, the same thing, focusing on his children. Tomorrow, the minister will launch the Child Online Protection Toolkit that we developed to help the children themselves, the guardians, the parents, even the teachers. So that we have that resilient nation, that the nation that is a way of protecting itself. Now, coming to the cybercrime bill, I see familiar faces. You can chat here. A lot of you have been part of this discussion before. This came a long way. But I would like to give context. This conversation started with a long time. Those of you that have known at the time of the lack of Rebecca, a favorite individual, he passed on. He was an expert, and he saw rest in peace. That took us back, because in the past, we have now, for those of you that know me, he was visually impaired. He was using a particular system as a tractor for the change because. So when he passed on, we really lost a lot of information because there nobody could trace such information. So we had to start from the problem. But we are here now. We have picked up where we were intended. So we are here to get input from you. Now, in his statement, Mr. Shikama indicated that Mr. Lai himself had reached out international. So we have decided at the site level to align ourselves to the site model laws on user protection and cybercrime and electronic transactions. At the African level, we as a country will be able to ratify the African Union Convention on Cybercrime and Data Protection. So all to transpose provisions of this, especially this convention. Then, of late, we've been engaged for the past how many years? 3 years? We've been as a country involved in the negotiations for the UN Convention on Cybercrime. We've been in Austria, we've been in New York, Seattle, we've almost had it in Washington, like you see the representation, just up here has been the ministry, the media police has also been involved. So we've been part of these discussions. So we provided our input. Now, why I'm also mentioning that is because there's an international convention this applies to each one of us. There is a Budapest Convention, which is more for the European Union. But the United Nations Convention is a neutral convention because then it applies for the UN member states. Whereas the Budapest Convention is more for the European Union. So we did part of these discussions and we provided our input until the UN General Assembly last year then endorsed the that convention. Last year, I have read in the papers that our minister his then signed, was assigned by the ex-executive president to sign that convention. So what does that mean? We sign it, we need to ratify it. We need to transpose those conditions from the convention into our domestic legislation. So that is how far we have gone. That's why we're looking at program. We would also want to engage you and actually inform you about the convention and how to what extent it has been integrated in our revised bill. Yes, so that is really the process that we have taken. And we're looking forward to getting input from you also in terms of the UN Convention, our bill in line with the UN Convention. So today, here we are, given all the background information, we have now a revised bill. So we are here, our purpose of being here is to engage you so that you can provide your input to the UN. This bill touches everybody. I remember being in Chakati last week, and the traditional authority, the traditional leaders, we worked on this bill, and we provided it. We were very much at ease because this is a matter of technology. It has financial and psychological factors. The price of psychological and economic impact. It touches everybody. They talk about how people have scammed off their money in their villages. So it shows that this is a bill that touches all of them.
The executive director speaking there, this has economical and psychological impact on everybody, and it touches the impact and it touches everybody. But for now, let's pause right here. We'll be back soon after a scheduled commercial break to continue. Stay tuned right here on the Reader News Analysis.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not...
Why pay more when you can pay less at USafe stores? Enjoy nutritious and delicious meals for the whole family. 4 kilogram of real good frozen and mixed chicken portions for only $199.99. 5 kilos of Polana pasta, just $129.99. 500 grams Romy 37% fat spread, just $13.99. 700 milliliter Crystal Gold tomato sauce, just $24.99. USafe, where good food costs less.
Menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. And we're, of course, talking about the cybercrime bill that is still consultations ongoing. Now, the draft cybercrime bill proposes a sweeping overhaul of Namibia's legal framework in order to combat cybercrime, introducing severe penalties, new institutions, and expanded investigation powers. The bill seeks to establish a unified legal, regulatory, and institutional framework for preventing, for detecting, for prosecuting, and punishing cybercrime. Significantly, it provides that where there is a conflict between this act and any other law, the Cybercrime Act will prevail on matters relating to cybercrime and cybersecurity, giving it overriding authority in digital crime matters. Now, the law also aims to protect critical national information infrastructure, safeguard computer systems, networks, data, and privacy rights, as well as facilitate international cooperation. Now, the bill introduces tough financial penalties, some reaching as much as 10 million Namibian dollars and imprisonment terms of up to 25 years in serious cases. Now, gaining unauthorized access and hacking, that is gaining unauthorized access to computer systems, has up to 3 million Namibian, is proposed to be up to 3 million Namibian dollars fine or 3 years imprisonment, and access with intent to commit further crimes is up to 10 years imprisonment. Unauthorized data modification, that is tampering with computer data, is proposed to be up to 10 million Namibian dollar fine or 10 years imprisonment. Cyber fraud and forgery, that is computer related fraud, is proposed to up to 10 years imprisonment or fines up to 3 times the value gained. Phishing and spamming, that is phishing schemes, up to 5 years imprisonment, and spamming intended to disrupt systems is proposed to get punishment of up to 5 years imprisonment. Identity theft and fake profiles, identity theft and impersonation is proposed to up to 3 years imprisonment, and the use of fake profiles to cause harm is also proposed to up to 5 years of imprisonment. Now, on cyberbullying offenses carry up to 10 years imprisonment, signaling a strong stance on online harassment. Cyber extortion and cyber terrorism, that is up for cyber extortion up to 10 years imprisonment, cyber terrorism up to 10 years imprisonment. If attacks on critical infrastructure are deemed terrorist attacks, the penalties rise to 25 years imprisonment. Now, the bill introduces severe penalties for digital sexual offenses. On pornography, publishing pornography, it is proposed to up to 15 years imprisonment and fines of up to 5 million Namibian dollars. Child pornography and grooming, producing or distributing child pornography is proposed for a punishment of up to 10 years imprisonment. Grooming or soliciting a child online is proposed with a punishment of up to 15 years imprisonment in aggravated cases. And revenge pornography, which is non-consensual distribution of intimate images, is proposed to up to 10 years imprisonment. Now, revenge pornography could be explained better in layman terminology. I could explain it to say when two people perhaps were in a relationship and send each other nude pictures, naked pictures, and then the other one decides that out of revenge, because you now decide that you're not, you don't want to be in a relationship with me anymore, I'm now going to put these pictures, this big nude pictures of yours that you sent to me or that I accessed in your phone the other time on online, threatening you and putting them up online. Or perhaps we, in fact, where somebody actually accesses a phone that is not theirs and decides to put a publish pictures that they found there that the person was sent by another person, now them becoming a third party, that also could be included in the revenge pornography. Now, critical national infrastructure protection, one of the most significant aspects of the bill is the protection of the critical national infrastructure. The minister may designate certain systems as critical, including banking and financial systems, telecommunications networks, public utilities, public transportations, government systems, and unauthorized access to critical infrastructure is proposed with a punishment of up to 15 years imprisonment. If classified as terrorism, that will then be up to 25 years imprisonment, and corporate bodies may face fines of up to 10 million Namibian dollars. Owners of designated infrastructure must then report cyber security incidents within 24 hours. They should also undergo compliance audit and register with authorities. Now, the creation of the new national cyber unit. The Namibia Cyber Security Incidents Response Team, that is NAMCREST. The bill establishes NAMCREST as the national cybersecurity coordination center. Its functions will then include responding to cybersecurity incidents, issuing public alerts, conducting awareness campaigns, coordinating with international partners. And the National Cybercrime Prosecution Unit, which is a specialized unit, will be created under the Ministry of Justice, that is to investigate and prosecute cybercrime cases, to preserve digital evidence, to issue investigation guidelines and support forensic data recovery. In regards to investigative powers, the bill grants authorities the power to expedite preservation of electronic data, to search and seize devices such as cell phones, iPads. Yeah, I think that's what I want to say. Computers. Yeah, search and seize devices, preservation of traffic data, and coordinate international investigation. These powers are likely to attract scrutiny regarding privacy protections and constitutional safeguarding. In an interesting cross-examination that happened last year, there was somebody the victim then, or the defendant, was then speaking about how her phone was confiscated without her permission or that sort, and that they have other personal stuff contained within that phone. How is she certain that the investigating officer will only stick to what then is deemed necessary for that criminal offense, and that they will not go overboard? But then again, I think it's a question of how would we then establish that this is going overboard? What if perhaps personal text messages also contain information that then could lead to prosecution or be termed as evidence? So it would really need some sort of a balancing, but I believe that the technical experts will understand, will make it clearer, better. Now, this bill is quite significant because the most significant elements could also be that the fines are extremely high fines, that is even being up to 10 million Namibian dollars, and prison terms reaching as far as 25 years in critical infrastructure cases, which could be quite, from our opinion, reasonable. Because let's say, for instance, you hack a system that contains very significant information of individual peoples. You know, let's say this is a public institution and it contains very valuable documents, valuable information. An example would be the Ministry of Home Affairs, perhaps a certain section that perhaps one hacks and be able gets access to that information. I think 25 years is an understatement, because you got hold of many Namibians' informations. Can even say millions of Namibians' personal data, which then could be used for identity thefts and other things. Therefore, the punishment, I would say, quite reasonable, 25 years and perhaps even more. Now, the act overriding other laws in cyber matters, where it comes in to say, in an instance where there are two laws and one is a bit silent or really not so much pronounced in terms of cybercrime, now the cybercrime law will override that law. So if this law is then passed, the bill would represent one of Namibia's most comprehensive and stringent legal responses to cybercrime to date, dramatically reshaping how digital offenses are investigated and prosecuted. But of course, let's also take a listen to a consultant, that is Mr. Johnson Mufelo, who was speaking on the overview of the cybercrime during the consultation, the ongoing consultations on the cybercrime bill. Let's take a listen to him.
approach to cyber crime, the cyber crime arena or field. So we also aiming at ensuring that we have our national information or critical national infrastructure is protected. I'll just give you an example of what happened in Kenya, what happened in the US the other day. And last year, I think it was last year, you remember a 7-year-old boy hacked into the UK Bank of England and transferred millions of pounds. And I said, I wish I had given that boy my house. It happened in the UK. And these are countries we admire as being so much ahead. So it happened. So we are looking at a law that covers the whole spectrum of cybercrime. We are looking at a law that protects our national, critical national infrastructure. We are looking at a law that is going to give people that value as human beings. In Kenya, we have a group called GENZ. We have them here. We have them, yes. If you follow, I have for Kenya, and done a lot of work around here in Namibia. Was it last year there about Kenya attacked, the GENZ attacked the parliament of Kenya. This is that is very highly that we attacked Kenya. That time I was still working in the parliament. So they stormed in and they were breaking everything. I was in my office. In my other life I was a lecturer, so I stepped out to go and save one of my deputies because we had the entered into. My deputy was sitting outside. As I was walking out, I met this marauding group and I showed them, relax. You know, we are not the people you're looking for. We are looking for the members. And they were carrying, I got them in my office, I gave them tea, I gave them water, and I was able to say, this is our man, don't touch him. And they were with breaking the items and all that. But the big thing is, after that, they hacked into the parliament system. In fact, our system crashed. You know why they reacted that way? Because there was a finance bill. They did one, and they had made their proposals. But in the morning, they knew the finance bill was going to be passed in the afternoon. Because parliament sits in the afternoon. But parliament, in their wisdom or lack of it, this was the second of that lies, changed their sitting program to meet at 9 in the morning instead of 2:30 in the afternoon. So they met separately in the morning, hurriedly passed the finance bill, but the masses are rejected. Then we just saw breaking news. I know the media is here, you know, like giving the news. So we gave breaking news an hour later, around 10 a.m. in the morning, that the finance bill has been passed, which is being rushed to for the presidential assembly. And the people were already gathered. They say, if we die, let us die. That's how we strong audience. But they also went ahead and hacked with our entire parliament system, the online and all that. We crashed our emails and everything against them. So we are dealing with a situation that this law is also going to protect our national, critical national infrastructure. Having said that, we are also going to deal with, so we are starting with particular offenses, and we are dealing with these offenses in a given manner. We are dealing with offenses against confidentiality, integrity, and availability of computer data, computer, electronic data, and other digital systems. Some of this we are going to update. So if you look at the bill, we are providing for.
And with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. This is, of course, On The Radar News Analysis. Now, should you be interested in partaking in the news analysis, please dial on 083-288-401.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of faith.
On The Radar Analysis, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Ndasa Zuzu. How are you?
I'm good. Ankabwana, how are you?
We thank God.
Mm.
So, thank you very much for presenting those critical, important information.
Yeah.
Yeah. My question now and my concern is on the issue of audios and the videos and all these things that are being sent around.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that some of them, they are actually impersonation, extortions, all those kind of distortion of character. And people, perhaps that's the awareness and the understanding need to be created on about the consequence of those things, because we are seeing them. Some of them within the family platforms, some of them, you know, they are sent viral or whatever you call it.
Yeah.
And the people are really deforming other people's character. And some of these unpleasant kind of comments and talking and things like that. And now this coordinate the sender or institution or whatever that's going to be established and created to prevent this cyber crime. Apart from being reported, you know, some of these things, they harm not only the individual, but they harm the society as at large, you know. If you now talk about things of immoral acts, I know there's an act there, or those are piece of registration that maybe an individual who's injured in the process might also consider, but it might be very difficult, you know, for people to just submit what you have to go to the lawyer, you have to go to the police and all this and this and that, and this other person has to be called in and what that process.
Yeah.
And like I said, this one is not to, the harm is not only done to me, for example, or to you, but it's the harm done, which is against the law or the moral principles. And everyone, I think, even the sender, would definitely just take it up. For example, if they hear, because they should be listening also to some of those platforms, or maybe media houses, or how do you call it?
Yeah.
So, because those ones need to also institute some kind of ethical issues.
I hear.
Consideration. So they might not even take it up, but I believe the institution that is so much in power to coordinate, create awareness, and deal with those cyber crimes. Not only when people are duped in maybe in their transaction and their money and things like that.
Yeah.
So I'll get in.
I get you, Uncle Bona.
So we need to understand and know now that will they also take up the initiative for themselves, not only to wait for the complainants to come, who might not even know the procedures of doing that.
Yeah.
And who might not also be able to call that particular individual who is defaming and other people's character and all these kind of things. So how do we deal with those things?
Interesting.
Do they take up initiative and step and deal with them even if an individual is not perhaps aware of that, yes, this statement is tantamount to, you know, it's against the law.
Mm-hmm. Now, the punishment that is proposed against cybercrime is quite hefty and high, you know, even as up to 10 million Namibian dollars, 3 million Namibian dollars, 3 years, 5 years. Okay, the 3 years and 5 years, I think it's not so. But yeah, Uncle Bona, do you think once the cybercrime bill is passed and the people are being held accountable, do you think it will definitely help curb, or we will see a lot of people still going ahead and doing illegal things in terms of cybercrime? Because as it is now, of course, people are doing heinous things and they are getting away with this because we can almost say it's a lawless web.
Yeah, so ignorance is not an excuse for the law, but I know some people are doing it unknowingly, and even if they know, but they are aware, actually, that's why you are sending that thing, you know that that particular person is not going to feel fine, is going to be injured, going to be wounded. So those punishment also might not deter the criminal action, conduct. But I think that's the only way. So if you couple it with the education and awareness, people might also come to an understanding that, yes, the consequences of these things is this and this and that. So I think it is just have to be there. Even if it might not produce good fruit, but at least people are punished, and I'm sure one of them or the other time will be able to disseminate this kind of information. Because we always hear in the media, they are looking for the money after the action is taken against them. So this and this and that. And then sometimes they are, you know, giving that pardon. And I think it will definitely, it's better to start than late. So that at least, at the punishment, I think the punishment also depends on the nature of the crime, of the insult. So if that, like you mentioned them, you know, the corporate, you have this other amount. But the individual, the corporate companies and all these institutions are aware. They know they have always educated their priests, their clients and saying this. But the individual ones who do not know, I feel pity for them, actually.
Mm.
Because there are so many things. You hear this one even when you listen to those videos in our WhatsApp platforms here. You hear those kind of things. And you think, I wish I could be the one now. Oh, this one is being deformed. And it's very painful, psychologically, emotionally, and economically.
Indeed.
It's only people who have so that courage and say, no, let's bring this one to order.
Exactly.
Let's bring this one to order, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
So thank you very much. I have been reading about cybercrime, and it's a very good thing, initiative, that the bill should be passed as urgent as possible. But the vulnerable people, especially in the rural area, who are now crimes against cyber crimes are committed against, are mostly in the bank, for example.
Yes.
Those are the ones, you know. And most of them, they are vulnerable people. We are just like this one. So those are fraudulent activity that you are hearing. But
and they get away with it.
Let them take the institution that is mandated to deal with that one. Let them take initiative. Even if the crime is not reported and they are aware of it, please let them help the people.
Indeed. Uncle Bona,
thank you very
much.
Juju, thank you. God bless.
Okay.
Bye.
Mm-hmm. There you had it from Uncle Bwana sharing his insights with us and contributions with us. Now you can also be part of the news analysis. 0832888401 is the number in studio. 0832888401 is the number in studio. Now let's switch over to economic indicators. $1 today is equals to 16.00 Namibian dollars, and one Swiss franc is equals to 20.63 Namibian dollars. One Australian dollar is equals to 11 Namibian dollars and 32 cents. €1 is equals to 18.84 cents, and one United Arab Emirates dirham is equals to 4 Namibian dollars and 36 cents. One Botswana pula is equals to 1 Namibian dollar and 21 cents. And with that, let's pause here now, take a trip to the marketplace. Of course, we'll be back with news beyond the borders of Namibia. Stay tuned.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast.
Care that goes where you go. That's international travel insurance through NHP. We facilitate cover of up to 10 million Namibian dollars per member for medical emergencies abroad as part of your membership. No extra charge. To receive your policy within minutes, simply register at nhp.com.na before you travel. T's and C's apply. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
The team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any...
Let's now get into news beyond the borders of Namibia. Today we're starting off in Zambia. Now the government of Zambia alongside partners are pushing for the end to child marriages by 2030. Interestingly, still in this era, child marriages are still ongoing. Let's now take a listen to that.
Zambia is edging closer to its national target in the fight against early marriage. The latest Zambia Demographic and Health Survey shows that child marriages have declined from 29% to 23%, nearly meeting the country's initial reduction goal. Speaking during a stakeholders' engagement meeting in Lusaka, Gender Rights Protection Director Nchimunya Nkombo said while progress is encouraging, the work is still far from over.
Zambia has recorded progress over the years. I think you have heard, we've heard of the 24% from 29%. And we thank all the efforts that all of you have rendered to this reduction. As individual institutions and collectively as a sector fighting to eliminate this scourge. The evidence is there, and we have seen it in the DHS.
Meanwhile, UNICEF Chief of Child Protection, Amelia Allan, commended Zambia for the strides made, reaffirming the organization's commitment to supporting programs that safeguard children's rights.
This strategy moves beyond intention to measurable, lasting impact in the lives of Zambian girls.
We want to start by commending the leadership of His Excellency, the President of Zambia, for his regional leadership in ending child marriage. On 14th of February at the African Union, he not only presented his African Union Champion Report on ending child marriage, but also launched an important new initiative.
And Plan International Country Director Antoinette Ngoma called for strengthened collaboration, urging stakeholders to scale up advocacy, community sensitization, and effective policy implementation.
Child marriage is multifaceted. I think we've heard from other previous speakers. It's endemic and it's a harmful practice. And it is indeed what poverty looks like. It robs children of their childhood. It disrupts their education. So these are some of the non-quantifiable costs or losses of child marriages.
Stakeholders say sustained commitment will be critical if Zambia is to eliminate child marriage entirely and secure a safer future for its children. Doreen Tembe, ZNBC News, Lusaka.
Still in Zambia, an international drug company injects $10 million into Kwambe expansion.
Zambia is pushing towards self-reliance in the production of essential medicines, and in Kabwe, that ambition is already taking shape. At the International Drug Company plant, a $10 million expansion project that could transform the country's pharmaceutical sector is taking shape.
We are committed to strengthening local pharmaceutical manufacturing capacity, reducing dependency on imports, creating employment opportunities, and supporting national economic diversification.
Inside the plant, workers move swiftly between construction zones and production lines, where intravenous fluids continue rolling out to hospitals across Zambia. The company currently supplies nearly all intravenous fluids used in the country's health facilities. Now, it is expanding its production to include antibiotics and other essential medicines, a move expected to significantly reduce Zambia's dependence on imported drugs.
So phase one was beta-lactam plant, where we are going to manufacture antibiotics which are imported. The plant has been installed and commissioned. We have started doing trial batches, and we are doing, you know, preparation of dossiers, which is a process we are following at the moment. And then the second plant is a general block where we can manufacture another 250 products, pharmaceutical formulation, which are non-antibiotic products, non-beta-lactam products, we can say. And that plant is, we have gray finished it. The equipment has started coming in. The third plant is upgrading our IV plant, the one which was done in 1970s during Kenneth Kaunda days. We'll be exporting to neighboring countries like Zimbabwe, Botswana, Namibia, and basically SADC countries. This is our plan.
Government says the objective is clear: strengthen local manufacturing, stabilize the medicine supply chain, and protect the health sector from global shocks. Deputy Secretary to the Cabinet says investing in pharmaceutical production is an investment in national health security.
It is our shared responsibility to reverse the historical dependence, estimated at nearly 90% on imported pharmaceutical products, strengthen domestic production capacity is not only economic imperative, but also a matter of national health security.
Once fully operational, the expanded facility is expected to create about 1,000 jobs, boosting both healthcare delivery and economic growth in Central Province. Kasavula Mchimba, ZNBC News, Kabwe, Central Province.
Meanwhile, maize farmers in Kenya are optimistic as new maize varieties boost productivity.
More participation by Kenyans in the pension saving.
Now, finally, maize farmers in Meru County are expressing renewed optimism about boosting production during the ongoing long rains season, with expectations of increasing yields from the current 10 bags per acre. The anticipated improvement follows the introduction of newly developed maize varieties, which are specifically bred to withstand drought conditions and show reduced susceptibility to fall armyworm infestation.
Generally, farmers get 5 to 10 bags per acre, but with the new varieties, especially in the rollers with Mazao Kame, you can get between 20 to 26 bags per acre. With Mazao 1, you can get between 22 to 35.
Now, acre, you are not harvesting even 10 bags. So we expect mavuno mingi vile tunaonanga wengine kwa TV, unaona mtu amevuna kwa shamba moja, amevuna, acre moja amevuna like 40 bags of maize and above.
When you talk about indigenous seed, we're talking about seed that in most cases has been recycled over and over and over again. And with time, you find that when you recycle seed, what happens is the productivity of the crop or the yields actually do go down.
Right, with that, we've come to the end of this edition of Business Prime.
Meanwhile, Rwanda-Kenya trade sees a sharp decline as transport routes shift.
Between East Africa's trade corridors isn't as fine. Rwanda's National Institute of Statistics shows imports from Kenya fell from nearly $118 million in October 2024 to just over $23 million in October 2025, a drop of more than 80%. Kenya's share of Rwanda's imports has now fallen to less than 5%, pushing the country down to 7th place among Rwanda's major suppliers. For decades, the northern corridor linking Rwanda to the port of Mombasa served as the country's main trade route, but that is changing.
When we're importing cargo from wherever it is coming from, it's coming in either from Mombasa or from Dar es Salaam. We've never closed use of any of those corridors, no. But we go with what moves fast. If there's a heavy log in Mombasa, then we use Dar es Salaam. If Dar es Salaam is clogged, We are very diverse. We go to Mombasa. So all we need in Kigali here and in Rwanda in general, we need things that move. So whichever corridor has an opening, we move.
Traders say delays translate directly into higher prices for consumers.
A container leaving Mombasa to Kigali should take no more than 5 days because everything has been cleared anyway. And today, with the digitization of everything, once a container is actually leaving China or India, wherever it's coming from, the goods are known. Everything should be transmitted digitally, and everything is known. So, and there's not going to be any opening of this container until it reaches the final destination. And now, there can be inspections, the physical inspection, which is done. But generally, we are moving to a situation where cargo should move faster. Because the longer it delays, the more it complicates the journey, the more it adds on the cost of transporting this money, and the ultimate cost comes to the ultimate buyer.
While northern corridor numbers have plunged, the central corridor linking Rwanda to the port of Dar es Salaam continues to gain ground, supported by infrastructure improvement and port efficiency. Although imports from Tanzania fell more modestly, from about $55 million in October 2024 to $44 million in October 2025, still nearly double the value of goods arriving from Kenya, reflecting broader challenges in regional trade and integration.
I want to start by framing what, again, the Council of Ministers Chair has said: implementation, enforcement, and accountability. Those really are the key words. The ESC is a population of over 300 million citizens. It has a combined GDP of over $350 billion. Majority of the population is youth. Okay, it is one of the most resource-laden regional economic communities. But yet, against all this, we have setbacks.
Nduva says inconsistent policies remain a major barrier.
There is lack of harmonization of fundamental policies that should enable trade. One example is domestic tax harmonization. Our 8 partner states have different domestic tax. How then will the goods move across the borders?
Regional officials say identifying gaps is key to improving trade flows.
Where access to external market is becoming more complex, intra-EAC trade must become simpler, faster, and more competitive. Yet, despite more than 2 decades of the customs union and 15 years of the common market, intra-EAC trade has remained at approximately 15% of the total trade, well below its potential and far from the ambition of our heads of state to at least double this figure. Our legal and institutional architecture is in place to enable the community to achieve this higher inter-regional trade target.
Rwanda says traders ultimately judge integration by real business conditions.
Let's now take a listen to this interesting discussion on Africa's air travel growing fastest, but airlines stay unprofitable.
Let's shift our focus now to Africa's aviation sector, and the International Air Transport Association forecasts that global air travel growth, rather it sees global air travel growth of 4.9% in 2026, which is slightly below the 5.2% which was expected in 2025. Now, it also says that Africa is projected to exceed that global average with 6% growth in 2026. However, despite stronger than average demand in Africa's air transport space, African carriers still remain the least profitable worldwide. Of the $41 billion in global net profit forecast for this year, African carriers are expected to generate just $200 million in profit. Well, earlier I asked Camille Alahouadi, the regional vice president for Africa and Middle East at the International Air Transport Association, whether regulators or African carriers are to blame for the state of Africa's aviation sector. Take a look.
I think a large portion of the blame lies on the regulators. It's, the charges, taxes, and fees in Africa in general is very, very high, the highest in the world. And on top of that, the bilateral agreements between African countries are limited. SATM's been around so many years and still not implemented. There's a lot of policies that governments have need to work together to eliminate and to assist the aviation industry.
Mm. So your position is that policy alone is enough to fuel that boom in Africa's aviation sector. So what role then do you think infrastructure development plays in the challenges that African airlines currently face?
Well, obviously, infrastructure does have a role. With the current GDP and the average GDP in Africa, it becomes very hard for passengers to travel. They can't afford it.
Mm. And just before we talk more about regulation, I want to quickly get your take on the fact that we've seen major airlines such as Kenya's KQ and, of course, South African Airlines really struggling with their bottom lines. Do you at all think that this has something to do with how these airlines are run?
I think partly there is that, But again, you know, when you have thin margins that the African airlines have right now because of the cost to operate in Africa, and obviously it's also the connectivity in Africa is hampering the airlines. That safe barrier that the airlines have to survive year over year becomes smaller and smaller and smaller. There are obviously other issues like the direct interference by government entities within their own government-owned airlines, tight regulations that make no sense to allow the safe, sustainable growth of the aviation industry in general, and the lack of investment by governments to reinvest in the infrastructure, which is surprising considering how expensive it is to operate to a particular airport in Africa, and none of the money and the revenue that comes from that airport from all airlines are reinvested in the infrastructure.
Now, not only are you calling for governments to lift these restrictions, you're also saying they need to honor bilateral air service pacts, which have basically guaranteed access to airline revenues in U.S. dollars. What do you think is standing in the way of governments implementing these changes?
I think they, you know, their vision, I think governments generally in Africa see the aviation industry as an immediate cash cow. So they would tax the tickets and ask for more fees and charges from the airlines and its passengers rather than try to encourage the aviation industry to grow. And an example, like, you know, if you look at the recent developments that are happening in Rwanda, the opening up of all the visas to all of Africa, and how much that's assisted Rwanda's aviation industry to grow, and in return, how much revenue has from the aviation industry has contributed into the GDP without the unnecessary increases in charges and taxes and levies. So Rwanda is taking one path, whereas other countries just simply add ridiculously high fees and charges and taxes onto the industry, onto the airlines itself, actually, without rethinking, you know, what this airline is doing, and how sustainable that airline is if they keep adding these charges, and what contribution this airline could have to the country's GDP.
Well, there have been also market liberalization efforts or frameworks. We've had the Yamoussoukro decision. We've had the single African air transport market. When you look at those, have those been effective in improving connectivity across the continent? And are there any initiatives that are giving you some hope, such as the Africa Continental Free Trade Area? Are there any initiatives that are improving the outlook for connectivity?
Right now, for the aviation industry, I don't think, I mean, SATM is being handled by AFCAC, and they are trying, but to get 54 countries to sit on the table and agree on it is a different story. I don't believe right now SATM is anywhere close to being fully implemented in the correct manner. There's a lot of signatures, a lot of meetings, and, you know, and the heads of states or their ministers sit and agree on stuff, but it never gets implemented in the end. So if SATM did get implemented, that definitely will help the growth of the aviation industry in Africa and will help the airline's bottom line improve. Okay, but in general, I don't think the representatives of each country have agreed and effectively implemented any of the SATM policies.
Of course, that's our discussion with Kamil Al-Ahwadi, the regional vice president for the Middle East and Africa at IATA. Well,
now, on African Central Bank's easing rates amid inflation concerns.
Let's shift our focus away from Tanzania now. And African central banks are continuing to lower interest rates in the first quarter of this year, though, of course, some banks reckon we're approaching the end of that rate-cutting cycle. Well, South Africa was the first out of the gate in late January, leaving its policy rate unchanged after a 25 basis points cut in November. Kenya's central bank followed on the 10th of February with a 25 basis points cut. And the governor there says the institution's goal is to get annual private sector credit growth to at least 10%. Over in Egypt, the central bank was the most recent to ease its rates about a week ago. It lowered its key policy rates by 100 basis points, and it reduced the reserve ratio for banks to 16%. Well, since April 2025, the Egyptian central bank has lowered its policy rate by about 725 basis points. But of course, once inflation is taken into account, real rates are still pretty high. That's at around 7%. Well, in Nigeria, where the policy rate is 27%, it is even higher at just under 12%. In the first part of this conversation with Ecobank's group CEO, Jeremy Awori, he explains why vigilance against inflation is still vital, even as we approach the tall end of this rate cutting cycle.
Well, firstly, it depends on the country, but I think if we're looking in general terms, I think we're coming closer to the bottom of the cycle. And then it's now one of vigilance, because obviously we have to watch for inflation. We've seen inflation coming down in many of the countries, but that doesn't remove imported inflation. So I think in terms of if we're looking at rates, I would say that we're probably close to the tail end of that, but they have to balance that against also FX rates and the demand there. So if the rates go down too low, then that can also create other problems in terms of the foreign exchange rate that is applicable and the attractiveness of the market if people are to invest in bonds, for example.
You mentioned the questions around, you know, trade disruption, and I want to focus on the U.S.-Africa trade relationship because at around $80 billion in two-way trade in 2024, at face value, it's not exactly massive. Do you reckon that relatively small-ish compared to, say, EU-Africa trade flows sort of help to insulate the economies in which Ecobank operates in from some of the worst effects of this, you know, fast-changing global trade policies?
I agree with what you've said. I think there's a few things when it comes to U.S. trade policies. They create a level of geopolitical uncertainty, and that can have some degree of contagion effect. It also affects the trade corridors, and it's affecting manufacturing locations, which have longer-term implications for trading between nations. So whilst you're right, the U.S. trade with Africa at around $80 billion isn't significant. Like if you compare that to China, where it's over $300 billion, we cannot still discount the impact of U.S. trade policies. When we look, for example, at AGOA, which was relatively stable in the years that we've seen over the last few years, what we've seen is that now there's uncertainty because it's being reviewed on an annual basis. So that creates a level of uncertainty for manufacturers and exporters to the U.S. So this is something we need to watch overall. But by and large, I think we still come back to the focal point, which is there's room for Africa continental free trade. That gives a degree of insulation against some of these policies. And we still need to watch for imported inflation in terms of things like fuel prices, among others.
With respect to trade diversification, are you seeing among your clients, are you seeing a lot more intra-African trade? Because I know the objective under the CFTA is to try and get trade within the continent as a whole to essentially rise up beyond current levels of around, you know, 12-15%, get that to at least 30% as fast as we can. Are we seeing that happening now that there's a bit of macroeconomic stability coming back into the picture?
Definitely. One thing that is becoming clear is African leaders are much more focused on what we need to do to drive up Africa continental free trade. So we've got Africa being focused on, we're looking at policies, countries are looking at where they can trade with each other and try and trade within local currency, which will also help their reserves. We're also seeing some significant projects will definitely help between intra-Africa trade. So if you look, for example, at the Dangote refinery, that just doesn't provide refined fuel products to Nigeria, but it also provides them across the neighboring countries as well, which again will boost intra-Africa trade. So we would really hope to see more value addition across all segments, whether it's in mining, whether it's oil and gas, whether it's agriculture, to push up this intra-Africa trade going forward. But there's still issues we need to solve in terms of non-tariff barriers, bureaucracy, among others that I think our political leaders are increasingly focusing on addressing.
How much more demand are you seeing for currency diversification? Because we spoke about the China-Africa trade relationship, well over $300 billion a little earlier. The bulk of that trade is still denominated, for the most part, in the US dollar. Are you seeing your clients coming to you and saying, well, why don't we try and, you know, move these transactions to the Naira RMB or the Rand RMB or the Kenya Shilling RMB?
Definitely. One thing that's become clear, and we've seen the implications of just the change in rates of dollars, not just on reserves, but also from a trading perspective. So we're seeing countries really looking at that diversification. So when we look at reserves, we are seeing countries using gold as an alternative, number one. When it comes to trading, definitely, like we talked earlier about trade with China at approximately $315 billion in 2025, definitely we're going to necessarily see more options around renminbi, direct conversion into African currency. So that's definitely something that is being looked at. We as a bank are supporting our clients with that, and also direct settlement with renminbi as well. So that's something that's important. We also need...
Meanwhile, U.S. President Donald Trump delivers the longest State of Union speech.
President Trump has been delivering a highly polarized America First State of the Union address to Congress, praising his own record while criticizing the Democrats. In a record-breaking speech, Trump said his administration had delivered what he called a turnaround for the ages in its first year. He said America was back, bigger, better, richer, stronger than before. He's hailed efforts to tackle illegal immigration and drug smuggling. He said Iran was pursuing what he called sinister ambitions, but said his preference was to solve the problem through diplomacy. Here's our North America correspondent, Helena Humphrey.
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
True to form, a president not known for his brevity delivered the longest State of the Union address in history. As his approval ratings slide and concerns about affordability grow, the president insisted Americans have never had it so good.
Our nation is back, bigger, better, richer, and stronger than ever before.
His greatest hits were on full display, doubling down on tariffs and staying tough on immigration.
The only thing standing between Americans and a wide-open border right now is President Donald J. Trump and our great Republican patriots in Congress. Thank you. Thank you.
Cheers as he introduced the Olympic champion U.S. men's hockey team. But tensions in the chamber, too.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
Democratic Congresswoman Ilhan Omar shouted in protest over immigration. Democratic lawmaker Al Green was escorted out after demonstrating. But the world's attention was also fixed on what the president had to say about a possible strike on Iran.
My preference is to solve this problem through diplomacy. But one thing is certain, I will never allow the world's number one sponsor of terror, which they are by far, to have a nuclear weapon. Can't let that happen.
Notably absent, any mention of the Epstein files. In the Democratic response, Virginia's governor accused the president of misleading Americans and called for accountability.
Tonight, as we watched our nation's lawmakers gather for a joint session of Congress, we did not hear the truth from our president.
But Donald Trump has made his primetime pitch ahead of November's midterm elections. Now it's up to voters to decide. Helena Humphrey.
And with that, we have officially come to the conclusion after this episode of On The Reader News Analysis. Now, do stay tuned for the Onkonana Dengue program brought to you by Lucy Shimi and the Home Run Show later on from 16:30. Brought to you by Dwight and Helmut. And then the business economic segment from 1800 hours are brought to you by David Shambe. From me, Dafa, happy Jesuitas. Goodbye. Have yourself a wonderful day and see you again tomorrow, Thursday, for other news.